Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
All right, good morning. Hello, test. Everything seems to be up and running this morning. This is Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. Coben, who is away lecturing in South America on free markets. There seems to be a desire for free markets down in South America. So those of you who would, don't forget to pray for Dr. Coben as he lectures on this vital subject. Well, we were talking yesterday mostly about the creation-evolution situation on the Christian Worldview yesterday, and so I thought that we could continue that a little while, and there are still, what I'd like to do is go into another subject directly from there, which has to do with it. All this began, shall we say, in earnest in the 1800s, early to mid-1800s, as we said, and it has been with us to this day. Darwin wrote The Origin of the Species, and it was published in 1859, and this was the time of Karl Marx and Engels, and a little later on you had this developed into the work of Sigmund Freud came along. All these things were connected in one way or another. And before that, of course, we had the documentary hypothesis of the what were called the higher critics of the Bible. We had a phone call that was broken up yesterday. We didn't quite have everything squared away, but we do have our phone up, and our production engineer has this all taken care of. So if you want to call in, you have to call in on our secondary line today, which is 201-6955 with an 864 area code. Let me say that one more time, slowly while you're racing for that pencil. 864-201-6955. Well, after the show, I got an email from our caller, Nelson, and he mentioned that he had written several articles. Actually, there are three articles, and I hope to get through all of them on his sojourn from being, I guess, a nominal Christian on to finding out that evolution was a foolishness, and then going on from there. So I read it, went back and said, Nelson, would you like to have me read this on the air? And he basically said, go ahead. So from the Patriotist online comes this article from Nelson Waller, A Southern View, by Nelson Waller, Evolution of a Creationist, Part 1. Did you ever wonder how I got to be what liberals call an extremist or radical right-wing nut? Not that I admit to these labels, but they are admittedly a useful satirical shorthand. My family has wondered that too. I tell them what I tell everybody. As an arch-conservative publicist, I am doing nothing but articulating the values and standards that motivated our better ancestors since the dawn of time. I am truly not worthy of them, but feel I do have an unusually good handle on what they thought and held important, thus a pretty fair vision for what is good and bad for a society, drawing on our forebears' deeds as well as their words. That makes me an anomaly in a world whose main goal is to disconnect with its past. I'm a misfit, yes, a terrible fit for the world we know today. I regret that older people often don't care about the differences between now and the life they knew in the 1930s, 40s, or 50s. But much more I regret that younger people have no idea that things were ever markedly different than they are now. But if you think the views you read in this space are so outlandish, you are most cordially invited to cite one that isn't, in fact, characteristic of all societies that are stable, livable, free, and prosperous. Experience seems to indicate that we can live by rules our more liberal members would like to imagine are reasonable and beneficial, or we can live by the truth. One system works, the other doesn't, and no amount of wishing is going to make it otherwise. I enjoy telling folks about a turning point in my life that happened one fine day out of the clear blue in a high school classroom in New Jersey, where I'm from. I believe I was a junior at the time and was considered the sage of the Bible club and the wry wit elsewhere. Virginia was a lovely, fresh-faced girl in class behind my own. I think she was a country girl and one of the least jaded folks you'd ever meet. I'm ashamed to say my gang considered sophistication a paramount virtue and don't think Virginia had much of it. This may have been the case to her credit. One day word got around that Virginia had written a paper for one of her classes attempting to debunk evolutionism. I'm sure I was not alone in thinking this less than sensational news. We all knew better, didn't we? Oh, we all believed the Bible was God's word and all that good stuff, but science had by then totally dispelled any possibility that the biblical creation account could be literally true, right? Then her paper itself started getting around. I thought I might as well have a look. It was only a paper by a fellow student to fill some class assignment. It went against everything inculcated into the 1970s young New Jerseyan consciousness, except perhaps for the few youth up north attending the Southern Baptist churches. The writing was uninhibited and brisk in its attempt to refute the entire scientific world on the questions of our origins. But you know what? It had the ring of truth about it. It was a quiet, casual thing. Causal. It was a quite causal thing, my reaction, but it eventually led to a new way of looking at things, everything, without exception, before you knew it. Because once you actually stop and look at the evolutionist picture, it only takes an instant to realize you've been lied to. Remember I was saying yesterday something about being snowed? You ever been snowed? Well, Nelson seemed to have understood the same thing himself. He'd been lied to. He'd been snowed. A snow job, as we used to call it. And he'd been lied to, and have only to click on one subject, then another, and another as long as you care to, until you're living a whole new life in a whole nother universe. And going on to part two. Let's see, we don't have quite enough time to go on to part two. We'll take this up in the next segment. How much time do we have, Mr. Production Engineer? Can we cut this off now and go on there? All right, we'll do that. We'll go short in this segment, and we'll go a little longer in the next one. We'll be right back.
Please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins. This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And again, you have Greg Farrier in here substituting for Dr. Coben, who's away lecturing in South America on free markets. Well, back to our friend Nelson Waller. I hope I'm doing this justice in my reading here. Pardon me for stumbling over a word or two. But I trust we're all getting the gist of what you're saying here. I think this is a something that is a part of this is common to many of us, in that we've been stunned by something we'd always assumed. And I know of this experience myself, along with some other people that assume certain things, and then all of a sudden somebody comes up to them and says, no, that's not the way it is. And then you begin to look and look and look some more, and next thing you know, you say, I've been lied to, or I'm not doing what I need to be doing. All right, well, this is something that we're reading from The Patriotist, and Nelson has his column, and it's called A Southern View. And we're on in the archives there, and the title of this is Evolution of a Creationist, and we are on part two. We were talking, you and I, about something that happened in my high school years. In brief, I was growing up with a classically clueless education in the things that matter in life, and was thus a sort of evolutionist by default. But then one day a fellow student's paper made its way to me, an attempt to debunk evolutionists, that most fashionable of opinions then and now. I read the paper and found it not silly at all. In fact, its writer, Virginia Jensen, knocked the theory full of holes in nothing flat. Time passed. I regret to say I remained rather worldly and even passed through a hippie period with many others in my chronically and insistently clueless generation. I had had a good Christian upbringing. Well, a stock model, one at the liberal Presbyterian church nearest our house, and vaguely supposed through all my strayings that I still believed the Bible the whole time. I did some extremely foolish things, some involving controlled substances. It's quite possible I had a death wish. Yet, there were many, many times when something deep inside told me this far and no farther. I thought of that paper through the years, and it's quite possible it was a factor in the shreds of prudence I still had left. Common grace. A remnant of awareness life had a purpose and could be worth holding on to. It was unquestionably one of the first times anyone in my immediate world had picked a fight with any of the gods of the age in a responsible fashion. A few years out of college, a lady answered my advertisement for music students. She and her husband were about my parents' ages and became fast friends. They were delightful, merry people and also staunch Bible students and teachers. Somehow, they got me interested in the Good Book for good. More about them another time. Suffice it to say that this was the point at which my life and Bible consciousness began to come together in earnest. God was real. I somehow knew, but the faith and the biblical record to say nothing of our Lord and his friendship to repentant sinners now became increasingly real too. It was rough going, because most people in my world were, yes, sophisticated. That reminds me, let me interject here, Dr. Lloyd-Jones talked about in the 19th century when the Scottish church, as he said, became more sophisticated, it lost its power. That's my interjection, and we'll go on here with what Nelson had to say. Yes, sophisticated. If you've never lived in the Northeast, you perhaps don't know what this situation is like. Sophistication is a fad that never fades and sucks in even those who would rather live a candid, down-to-earth life. Thus, neither my friends or family were interested in the old-time religion, and people who were interested, alas, remained doggedly simple-minded about most things. Sadly, that includes the above-mentioned couple. They led me to the Lord. I tried to lead them to a truly biblical approach to the great moral questions of the day. Fully half the Christian mandate by my understanding of the scriptures in their totality, but they'd have none of it. Evolution is, of course, the very epitome of sophistication, and to pierce the veil of its deceitfulness is to know the best of both worlds, the soul and the mind. I remained always grateful to Virginia for having shown a pathway out of the world's wisdom for me at that early age, and I wanted to tell her so, but there seemed to be no way to find her. She was in my sister's class, but my sister had no recollection of her. The school, of course, had no clue. Finally, my 31st high school reunion came up, and a classmate that sought me out by email was able to tell me where to reach her. And that's part two. So we'll go to part three of The Evolutionist of a Creationist by Nelson Waller. You'll recall we were discussing the way a high school classmate's paper debunking evolutionism was the point at which it began to dawn on me that there really might be something to this Bible study thing and the original politically incorrect Christian faith of our fathers. It didn't immediately change my life, but it did change my thinking by a degree or two, just enough to make a lasting difference that bore fruit a few years later. I wanted to contact Virginia to let her know this, but had no idea where she might be. Finally, through a member of my high school class, Virginia was the next class after mine, gave me her address, and I had the pleasure of emailing her a word of appreciation about 33 years after the fact. She didn't remember me. Understandable, since she was a grade younger. What's amazing is what she said when I told her the paper had been a first step toward the kingdom of God for me. I'd thought all this time she must have been a seasoned, lifelong fundamentalist, but guess what? Her paper was the beginning of her walk in faith as well. One of my rules for living is never to assume anything, and this seems to show how wrong an assumption can be. As turns out, Virginia is happily married to a fine man, still a good Bible believer, and relocated to Pennsylvania from New Jersey, where we grew up. New Jersey, a fine place to have graduated from to somewhere else. Okay, Nelson, I hear you on that one. And evolutionism has proved useful through the many years of my ever-growing faith. It's a perfect example of how foolish, ignorant, and vain man gets apart from the wonderfully simple truth of the gospel and its creation account ad infinitum. Hey, we Christians are trying to convince a world of the total depravity of man left to his own devices, and evolution is the perfect example of this. Total inanity dressed up as erudition. Nobody's something like the emperor has no clothes, I'd say. That was my little interjection. Nobody's coached or even encouraged me in this pursuit, but I've enjoyed using the evolution myth as a buzzsaw against liberal folly in general. It's a simple enough matter and a pervasive enough dogma that you can discuss it with children of almost any age. When my town's Daily News object was still willing to print my letters to the editor, I wonder why they quit, Nelson. When they were still willing to print my letters to the editor, we had a spirited exchange in that department about the big E. I pointed out that there are no transitional forms in the fossil record. Example, semi-bird creatures with wings only halfway developed. Others with multiple college degrees wrote in to say it was believed that at various times earth changes had swallowed up portions of the, got a typo in there, Nelson, gotta go out and take care of that. Swallowed up portions of the fossil record. Very selective earth changes, I observed. Let me read that again and do that justice. Others with multiple college degrees wrote in to say it was believed that at various times earth changes had swallowed up portions of the fossil record. Very selective earth changes, I observed. End of conversation. Let me stop and make a comment there. A friend of mine, a pastor friend of mine, copied an old Bill Buckley forum. Bill Buckley being a Roman Catholic, had gathered a bunch of people around him, and they were philosophers, scientists, lawyers, all kinds of people. I'd say there was roughly 10 or 12 people on this panel. And the one side took the creationism side, Buckley being there, and there was another side. There were philosophers and biologists and all kinds of people on the other side. If you can ever get a hold of this, I suppose it's archived in Bill Buckley's old show on public television. Buckley had this big debate, evolution or creation, and I can remember there was a philosopher, professional philosopher, who was questioning the biologist there, talking about transition forms. And he asked them, how do you characterize a transition form? How do you know when one form has gone to another form? And boy, did that turn this whole thing into a mess. They would, you get out of them, we can't know that, and it was a whole lot of blah, 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 and they refused to answer him, and the camera would go back to him, and I remember he had his hands up in a praying position, saying, please, I'm begging you, can you please tell me how you define a transition form? And it would just go back, they just didn't know what to do. They could not say what a transition form would do. Now, you notice in the old books that many of us who were victims of the public school situation, those books would talk about the dawn horse or the eohips, that little horse, which became something a little bigger and a little bigger until finally we have things like Clydesdales. Well, that was an evolution that took many years to do. Well, they still have little horses nowadays as big as a puppy, and they have the big Clydesdales. That's not evolution. That's just breeding and genetics. They're still horses. Well, this fellow caught them. Whether he was a real believer or not, I don't know. but he sure did catch these biologists at their own game. Well, anyway, Nelson obviously ended that conversation about the selective changes. Let's finish up this article here. Everybody around us believes evolutionism, but it doesn't make it so. The TV, the local public schools, the federal and state governments, the encyclopedias, the daily and weekly press, the college profs, the preachers, and the Sunday school teachers. Let me interject here again. On our creation study group, I remember when we were trying to get some of the churches involved, and a lot of churches did get involved, but one of the men who does a lot of publicity for the creation study group was going around calling up churches, and he was evidently rather shocked that pastors would rebuke him for even wanting to bring this subject up. And that when I heard that, I thought, oh boy, are we in real trouble, where pastors are refusing to get involved in or having dealings with the creation evolution debate. Here the left wing, the Hegelians, are taking away the Word of God, the foundations of the church, and it's and all its intellectual activity, and these pastors want nothing to do with it. I wonder what the motivation is there, or is it just out of is it pure ignorance, or is it an unwillingness to stand for the truth? Well, anyway, the preachers and Sunday school teachers and many, many, many forces all around us actively teach evolutionism and low-rate creation. Doesn't make it so. At the rate we're going, everybody in the world may someday believe in evolution and have no awareness that the Bible ever existed. It doesn't make it so. But isn't it great to know you're on the winning side of the evolution war? Let's all make sure to take stock of where we stand personally in relation to the ultimate truth, and to thank God for how He's brought us out of the darkness, each in our own way, at our own pace. All right, time for a break, and we'll be right back.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
As long as the state, the agency of coercion, stands over society offering to dispense economic privilege to those who pay it homage, conferring an advantage on some men at the expense of other men, the misuse of political power should be the first line of attack for the moralist. It is inevitable that political privilege will be used in this way if it is available and begging to be used. No people has ever resisted it who have been led into this temptation. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 84.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
All right, this week you've got me, and this is Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. Coben, who's away lecturing in South America on free markets, answering the call to those who have called down there wanting to know more about something that is foreign to those markets and people down there. And it's getting more and more foreign to us up here. All right, we just finished reading Nelson Waller's essays on his evolution of a creationist. Now, evolution itself is not a bad word. It basically means something like a rolling out of one's own personal history or something to that effect. So, for something to evolve, is the word itself is not bad. It's how it's used in its context. In other words, if you're saying that the frogs became something a little higher to something a little higher and finally we got up to man, well then evolution is not what we're talking about. That's a false doctrine. Interestingly enough, I had an interesting experience yesterday regarding evolution. My daughter acquired a couple of iguanas about a year ago, and they've been with us for about a year. I built a cage, and they're out on the back porch right now, enjoying the warm South Carolina, warm, humid South Carolina summers. And I went to feed them yesterday afternoon and left the cage partially locked. Well, this guy, who's about 3 feet long, I'm going to say he's about 16, 18 inches long in his body, and he's got that tail that makes up the rest of that. He pushed the door open and got out on the porch. And when I came back and said, "You better get back in the cage," he told me that in no uncertain terms that he didn't want to be there. So he ran off, jumped into a tree off the porch, and then fell to the ground for some reason. And I circled around him, knowing that I'm going to have to try and catch this thing. And I took a step forward, and the chase was on. And he ran across the yard. And as he started to run, interestingly enough, now you know what an iguana looks like. It's a climbing creature. And it has these long claws that are able to hang on to things. And they spend most of their time lolling around on rocks and stumps and trees wherever they can find the sun. I'm told that the word iguana actually means tree chicken. And I guess that they taste like chicken when the natives of the places where they come from eat them. They say, like so many other things, like rattlesnake and everything else, it tastes like chicken. Well, anyway, this iguana, this tree chicken, was running across the ground. And I started to describe what they look like. They're kind of long, four legs, a tail, a big, impressive-looking dragon-like head, whatever a dragon may look like. I guess if you angle his neck the right way, it would look something like a T-Rex, the head anyway. Well, as the chase was on, he started to run and gain speed. And it was almost like an airplane. His front end started to rise up, and he ran on his back 2 feet. And that was rather shocking to me. And I say that. I finally cornered him in a little garden fence that we had, grabbed hold of him, and put him back where he needed to be. Well, that was interesting to me. I actually have the marks to prove that I caught them. They have sharp claws. There are a lot of things that we assume about fossils and the things that we see. And who would have ever thought that this thing would rise up on its back legs and run? Well, there are all kinds of things we find in the fossils that perhaps are not exactly what that we assume are things that are not actually as they were. When we find different types of fossils, you may find some kind of a creature that when you find it, all you find are the bones. And then what you have to do is put the bones together. And in our day, we're led to believe that there is some magical way in which you can actually find out what this creature looked like. And I remember years ago when I was in college, back in the late 60s, actually it was the mid-60s, and we were watching one of these public television type things, and there was they were doing something about, I don't know, remember if it was Piltdown Man or one of the ancient, supposedly ancient precursors to humanoids, and I remember they showed the dig there where they found this body, and they found what looked like a piece of a jawbone protruding out of a rock, and they got their little brushes there, and they dusted, and they came up with a piece of a jawbone about the size of an average finger, with a tooth jutting out of it, if I remember right. And they dusted it off, and then they put it up on a little stand, and they started to add things to it. And even back then, as an unbeliever, looking at that, I said, how'd they do that? Well, they'd add a little more, and a little more, and a little more, and within a few seconds, they actually had this ape-like humanoid staring at you with these glassy eyes. And they said, this is what they look like. And having researched that in years later, that's all they really did find, was just a jaw with a tooth sticking out of it. And from there, they knew that this creature, what it looked like. They made a model like a mannequin. Well, that's just one of the things that stuck in my head, like things that stuck in Nelson's head, about this was all, I'm being snowed here. There's somebody lying to me about the origin of the species, so to speak. Well, the years went by, and I began to read more and more stories about evolution, and of course yesterday we talked about the rock layers and all those other things, and we began to realize that there is justification for a young Earth when we see all the layers in the Earth. If we go past a place where a road's been cut out or a river has cut out something, then you actually you see the layers. And over at Mount St. Helens, where it all happened very quickly, and it looks very much the same as things that we assumed were very ancient, then you start saying, well, is this really very ancient? Has it been a long time? And of course, another principle of evolution is that it took a long time. It has to take a long time. And the more that these people, the evolutionists, begin to see in their scientific, so-called scientific studies, the more evidence they accumulate, they have to say it took more time and more time. And so when evolution was first popular, we were not talking about long ages, but as time went by, you know, we're now up to billions of years that the Earth has been around and started to develop. All right. I've been given the signal. It's time for a break, and we'll be back shortly.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
All right, we're up again. Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. Coben, who's in South America lecturing on free markets. A little bit of news that I've come across that is near and dear to me at the moment. I'm just going to ask your prayers for a friend of ours. Some of you may or may not know her. Her name may slide by you in an email from place to place. I know that Tony Beam knows her, and a few more of us know her. Juliet Kozak is in the hospital, and I'm told preliminarily that they were going to do some sort of a invasive procedure in her. She had chest pains the other day, Saturday night, and ended up in the hospital. And she was over there in the Easley Hospital, Easley Baptist, and she has now been transferred over to Greenville Memorial, and they're going to do some, I'd heard the word a stint, and they're planning on doing that today. The last I heard, our pastor, wrote a note, and we would ask your prayers for her. She's a patriot, and a variety of us connected with TRN and other patriotic type groups know her, and so we ask your prayers, and we send out our good wishes to her if she happens to be able to hear us somewhere. And certainly Tony Beam knows her, because she is the nemesis of Tony Beam, seeking to help him out in his quest for truth. And we'll leave it at that. Get well, Juliet, and we'll be looking to see you. Thanks for all your patriotic work. Well, we've been speaking about evolution, and there is a person whose name is connected with the 19th century, the things that actually happened in the 19th century, and the man's name was Hegel. And Marx was a member of the Young Hegelians, if I have my history right. He was a philosopher that whose thought processes gave rise to the statist, eventually the statist mentality that we have today. interestingly enough, we had the documentary hypothesis that we spoke about yesterday, where we actually had an evolution of the Bible. It was not God-breathed, according to this thought process. They very quickly, to go over that very quickly, the Bible might have originally, or the first few books might have been written by Moses originally, but they've changed over the years according to these people. And things were added, things were taken away, things were edited and so forth. And we actually have an evolution of the scriptures. They developed over the years. The people in the time of the kings looked at Moses and they would say, well, we don't like this interpretation or this. They actually have one school of thought says that one of the editors was a woman, and so he was more kind toward women in certain portions of the scripture. She was more kind toward women in certain portions of the scripture, so she would edit this out or edit that out, or put this in and put that out. And so when we finally get to the Bible we have today, it is a conglomeration of various authors, which is, as I pointed out yesterday, another problem that you have with this evolutionary type of mentality. In other words, you need time, you need a variety of factors to come in, and something cannot be God-breathed or created, or God does not speak to man by this assumption, and we need time, we need more people, we need more opinions to come to anything that's even close to the truth. All right, well, there's the evolution of the scriptures. We come along to the middle of the 19th century, and we have people like Marx and Engels and other people that actually have an evolution of the state. And they, I have before me in my hand a huge book. Went all the way up to the footnotes, and it had something like 959 pages in it. It was a book by Dr. Francis Nigel Lee, and it was published by the Craig Press in 1974. It fills my hand in its size, and it's called Communist Eschatology, A Christian Philosophical Analysis of the Post-Capitalistic Views of Marx, Engels, and Lenin. It's a huge book, and my thought processes tell me when I was in college, I saw that I actually wrote a paper on the connection between the views that there was an evolution of the scriptures, evolution of the state, and of course you have the biological evolution doctrine. And then you even have Freud coming on a little later, who looked upon the development, the psychological development of man in an evolutionary point of view. And all these things are wrapped around our society and permeate our society, and things that need to be purged away. The great Dr. C. Greg Singer said, I'd heard him say one time, that when Freud lectured at Harvard Law School, it was the end of American jurisprudence. Instead of having a constitution as we have that emphasizes man's freedom and so forth, we actually have a society that lets man free of his responsibility. All right, the signal has come. We need to go for a break, and we'll be back shortly.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording. Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN. There is a place for government in the affairs of men, and our Declaration of Independence tells us precisely what that is. The role of government is to protect individuals in their God-given individual rights. Freedom is the natural birthright of man, but all that government can do in behalf of freedom is to let the individual alone, and it should secure him his rights by making others let him alone. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 142.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
All right, we're trying to hurl liberalism aside, and this is Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. Coben, and as I've said before, he's way down in South America lecturing on free markets. There's evidently a market for lectures on free markets down there, and so we hope that Dr. Coben is having a great measure of success down there and planting seeds of truth down there amongst the people that have actually made it possible for him to go down there. We have a line open today. It's our secondary line at 864-201-6955. Give us a call if you feel like having a chat with us about any of these things. That's 864-201-6955. All right, as I was saying before, I had this huge book in front of me that Dr. Nigel Lee wrote back a long time ago, and it's called Communist Eschatology. And just like Christianity, it has an eschatology. What is eschatology? It's the doctrine of the final things, or more broadly put, it's how things progress out toward the end of things. And like so many other things that so many other doctrines and thought processes, they are copies of what Christianity is. Christianity, the Bible, the religion of the Bible, has an eschatology, although a lot of people don't agree on what the proper eschatology is. We do have a communism did try to imitate Christianity, perhaps making it appealing to modern man. The there's an interesting little quote in here where Dr. Lee, who is actually a postmillennialist, by the way, he used Gary North, another postmillennialist, in a little critique of a paragraph-long critique of this situation here, a critique of communist eschatology of religion. And it says, undoubtedly, according to Dr. North, undoubtedly Marx was a mighty proponent of the cause of autonomous man. a man being dependent by himself. Man is to stand alone on his own foundation and create a new world, a paradise on earth. Man is his own God, and he has God's very power of creation. Man is totally creative. Yet Marx's blueprint for action was a call to total destruction. Godless man has a passion for destruction, even as the Bible declares, "All they that hate me love death," Proverbs 8:36, section B. Marx, however, could not admit that man's authority is derivative. Like the self-proclaimed autonomous men at the Tower of Babel, he announced the creative power of man apart from God, and they said, "Go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name," that is, define ourselves without reference to God, "lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the earth." And that's a reference to Genesis 11:4. "Ye shall be as gods," the tempter promised, and Marx believed the promise. In affirming the powers of man for total creation, he launched the forces of absolute destruction. Man's capacity for self-delusion seems boundless, but man has been warned of the results of such self-deception, and the Marxists shall be the recipients of their proper reward. Bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth shall be filled with gravel. Proverbs 20, verse 17. And that's from Gary North's book, a much shorter book, but a good one nonetheless, Marx's Religion of Revolution from 1968. That's interesting, that little word there for self-delusion. I believe that Dr. Greg Bahnsen, one of the apologists, a great Vantillian apologist for our time, did his PhD on man's capability of self-delusion and how men actually delude themselves and sway themselves to other opinions apart from that which is biblical. The interesting thing about this whole communist eschatology book here is that it's got a big section in here on the actual communist view of eschatology, and if you go down to the it is huge, and it's not something I can sit here and read on the radio, but I was going over it last night and found that there are sections in here where the Bible is actually imitated. Back here, I don't know where this comes from, but it's well known that Satan is referred to as the ape of God. And when you think of something being the ape of God, apes supposedly imitate people. And or whatever they see, and that's how they learn. They're very talented creatures. They have hands very similar to ours, and they can do a lot of the same things we can do. They don't, in some cases, they do things better, like you couldn't climb a flagpole with your hands and feet like they can, but we being made in the image of God, and apes not being made in the image of God, we are the ones that usually end up doing the action, and the apes imitating us. Well, anyway, enough of that. All that point is to be that Satan imitates God in that he is a usurper in trying to usurp the kingdom of God, tries to usurp the affections of man and angels as well. And in this big chronological table that we have here, it's interesting that we have, let's see, I'm coming over to the front of this here, and it has a big chronology with dates in it, and it's called, one of the titles is called "The Period of So-Called Primitive Communism Before Plus or Minus 600 B.C. And, of course, he's dealing back there with the Greeks and so forth. he Marx denied direct creation, but he espoused evolution and how things just came of pre-existent matter, and how all that formed together is basically a mishmash of speculation. And then it talks about the period of slavery, and just thumbing through here, the period of feudalism, capitalism, and then it goes on to where the period of capitalism goes on into the 1600s, the 1700s, and it talks about the different places where communism began to put down its roots in France and Germany and Switzerland and England and on up into the United States. And how much time do we have here? Yeah, we can keep on going here. All right, we got plenty of time. And of course, this is all with an evolutionary point of view, where we've gone from the various periods of slavery and feudalism and capitalism, and then as capitalism has the seeds of its own destruction in it, communism begins to rise. And of course, you notice the parallel here with the kingdom of God. When the kingdom of God was inaugurated, and now there's a whole other point of view there. I'm going to say that the kingdom of God began when Christ resurrected from the dead, and the apostles began to go out and announce the inception of the kingdom. And as it goes throughout the earth, sometimes suffering violence, sometimes prospering, we see this permeating like yeast throughout the world until the time the Lord returns. Communism has this permeating and going throughout the world and coming to fruition, and then into the workers' paradise. And all these interesting little paragraphs in here where the various communist leaders would go out and proclaim that socialism has triumphed and communism is just about to come to fruition, and the workers' paradise is going to be in fruition and everybody's going to be happy. Well, that is their hope and their deception. There's a parallel between that and the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God talking about the new heavens and the new earth. Of course, the Soviets talking about everything being perfect and having a workers' paradise. Interesting, at the very end here, there's a paragraph, a title here that says, "The Period of Post-Communism." Okay, the time is unknown, and Engels said the whole world and its inhabitants freeze to death, and the solar system drops into the sun, and so forth. And that's from Engels, The Dialectics of Nature. Now, how do you like that? There's some real hope for you there, isn't there? Well, of course, when you have a worldview like theirs, it ends up in destruction. Parallel that with the view of the scriptures. Of course, here's a quote here: "The overthrow of communism," the parallel to Engels here, "the overthrow of communism and all other isms at the universal triumph of the kingdom of the triune God and his Christ." How is that as opposed to the whole world and its inhabitants freeze to death, and the solar system drops into the sun? Well, even just by its sheer appeal, I would rather be in the side of the one who overthrows all the isms of this world. All right, there's capitulation, not a capitulation, what's the word I'm looking for? A summary of what the communist eschatology is all about. We'll take this up a little more in a few minutes. It's time for a break.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time you're listening to a recording, calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective. Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
As long as the state, the agency of coercion, stands over society offering to dispense economic privilege to those who pay it homage, conferring an advantage on some men at the expense of other men, the misuse of political power should be the first line of attack for the moralist. It is inevitable that political privilege will be used in this way if it is available and begging to be used. No people has ever resisted it who have been led into this temptation. Reverend Edmund Oppitz, in The Libertarian Theology of Freedom, page 84.
The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
We're back. Greg Farrier substituting for Dr. Coben away on the lecture circuit down in South America, where they've called him down there to tell him something about free markets, which he knows quite a bit about. All right, we're going to do something a little unusual here. We're going to give Tony Beam a little time to express an opinion, which, generally speaking, here is quite good. And Tony Beam, when he speaks on creationism, he knows what he's talking about. And we're going to read from the Times Examiner. You know, I haven't given the Times Examiner an endorsement. This is our local weekly newspaper. The conservative voice of the Palmetto State has lots of good authors in here, including Marvin Olasky, our own John Coben, Dr. Stephen Yates, Charlie Reese, and Walter Williams, Phyllis Schlafly, any number of Pat Buchanan, any number of good authors, pundits, and also we have Tony Beam in here with his Christian Worldview. The title is Intelligence Required to Understand Intelligent Design. This weekend, I discovered a huge nest of wasps who had decided they really like my front porch. Since the danger that many stinging insects posed was a real danger, I decided they had to go. I poured half a glass of gasoline, stood a safe distance away, and threw the gas at the nest. Okay, whatever turns you on, I guess. My plan would have been a huge success if I had actually hit the nest, but all I managed to do was anger and stir up the wasps. They flew off in all directions looking for someone, anyone to sting. I barely escaped, only to return later after they had settled down, and this time I successfully sent them packing. Well, this is a good analogy, Dr. Beam. The moral of the story is, if you want to stir up a wasp nest, just throw gas in their general direction without hitting them. If you want to stir up a nest of liberal scientists who believe Darwinism is more of a religion, than a reliable theory, just suggest that the universe might have come into being some other way. When President Bush suggested intelligent design be taught in the public school system alongside Darwinism, the liberals went off in every direction looking for someone to sting. Paul Krugman of the New York Times flew immediately into the direction of the nearest creationist, accusing them of pretending to be engaging in science. He warns that the political muscle of the religious right may be enough to start a process that ends with banishing Darwin from the classroom. Well, because the public school system is a socialistic system, part of the state, you're not going to see creationism given any place there. It all goes together, as I hope I've been demonstrating, going back to the documentary hypotheses, the evolution of the scriptures, Marxist-Leninism, of course, we'll throw Engels in there as well, the evolution of the state, and Freud, the evolution of the mind. They're all going to teach this type of thought process contrary to the scriptures. It tries to imitate the scriptures without actually having the authority of the scriptures. It puts authority in another place, and that of the evil one. It might be a good idea, we continue, it might be a good idea for Paul Krugman and other liberal pundits to do their homework before they consider any questioning of Darwin to be nothing more than a right-wing religious posturing. Recently, in Greenville, South Carolina, a group of well-respected scientists came together for a forum titled Uncommon Dissent, Scientists Who Find Darwinism Unconvincing. These scientists had at least three characteristics in common. First, many of them were world-renowned in their field of expertise. Second, they all agreed that Darwinism, from purely scientific reasons, is not a plausible theory. And finally, not one of them claimed to be an evangelical Christian. Biochemist Michael Behe, author of the book Darwin's Black Box, made a compelling case for intelligent design by using Darwin's own words against him. Darwin once concluded, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. Well, that has since happened. What Darwin was saying was that if there existed an organism which was irreducibly complex, that is to say, it could not function without all of its parts working together, his theory would be disproved. Since 100 years ago, Darwin had no way of seeing inside a living cell. He thought the cells were extremely simple. As Dr. Walter Brown says, back in those days, scientists didn't think cells were any more complex than a ping pong ball. Well, anyway, that was my interjection there. Nothing more than a blob of protoplasm. Today, we know that each living cell is an irreducibly complex molecular machine that simply could not have evolved piece by piece. Even when you consider the flagellum, which is attached to some bacteria like a tail, or a rotor on a helicopter, that's my interjection, you have to marvel as the complexity of its design. The flagellum operates like a tiny propeller, requiring dozens of precisely tailored, intricately interacting parts, which just could not have evolved in a piece-by-piece fashion. When I speak about the Christian worldview, I often touch on the importance of realizing the majesty and complexity of the world we live in. I often use the illustration of a family traveling to South Dakota for a vacation where their children see Mount Rushmore for the first time. They would probably excitedly ask something like, "Mommy, Daddy, how did the faces of those presidents get up there on the mountain?" I think even our children would look at us incredulously if we answered them by saying, billions of years ago, the forces of erosion started working on the face of Mount Rushmore, and after a million years of water doing its work, four presidents' faces popped out of the mountain. I always end by saying, where there is evidence of design, there must be a designer. Dr. Norman Geisler sums up the intelligent design argument by asking, if you walked in the kitchen and saw your name and address spelled out on the kitchen table, would you think the cat knocked over the alphabet cereal box? Random chance can account for simple changes in nature and may explain the development of simple organisms, but complexity cannot be a result of random chance, and random chance is a linchpin in Darwinism. Before Paul Krugman dismisses any dissension from Darwinism, he might want to consider the persecution faced by radical scientists like Copernicus, who dared to challenge the popular theory that the world was the center of the universe. That same persecution today is reserved for those who would dare question Darwin's conclusions. Maybe, just maybe, someday the courageous scientists of today who would question the doctrine of Darwin will be respected as those who led us out of intellectual darkness. Regardless of who wins the current debate between evolution and intelligent design, God will have the final word, and his word is, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. All right, well, that's Tony Beam, who has often clashed with Dr. Coben in political matters. He does talk about here something I'd like to comment on. When President Bush suggested intelligent design be taught in the public school alongside Darwinism, it says the liberals went off in every direction looking for someone to sting. Well, as I said before, President Bush knows how to handle the evangelicals and the conservative Christians just by throwing that that comment out there. So I would just give a warning out there to say, well, President Bush is coming down on the side of creationism or intelligent design. That's not necessarily a wonderful thing. It just sounds like a political ploy to me, which he's done over and over again. And regarding Nelson's call yesterday, talking about the intelligent design term, it's something that would appeal to the evangelical, and it would also appeal to the anti-Darwinian. And that when you say intelligent design, you're not saying God, you're not saying the God of the Bible, you're not, it gives you a lot of room to work with. And of course, from the evangelical side, when you say intelligent design, the evangelical would say that all intelligence, all knowledge comes from God. So everybody's happy with the term intelligent design, and it can be used with both believer and non-believer alike. So there's a word of caution. Use it if it does you any good, but use it carefully. I guess it's something like fire. It can be a useful servant, or it can be a fearful master in these matters. All right, that's the Tony Beam article, and I need to move the paper over here out of the way, and with a microphone in front of you, that's not always an easy thing to do. All right, I think we can take a short break here at the moment, and we'll be back shortly.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You may also dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Or you may email your question or comment to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And remember, the show is live from 7:30 in the morning until 9 in the morning Eastern Time. If you're listening at any other time, you're listening to a recording. Calls will only be received between 7:30 and 9 in the morning Eastern Time. Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
All right, we're back for the last time till tomorrow. We just have a few moments to wrap all this up. I trust that this has been profitable, some of the things that I've come across and brought them to your attention. Today we've looked at the evolution of the state, the evolution of the mind, the evolution of the scriptures, and how it is actually anti-biblical. It's an anti-Christian worldview, and I hope it's given you some food for thought. Tomorrow I hope to kind of extend this out a little further and make it interesting, keep it interesting, and give us a call tomorrow. Be prepared with questions or answers or comments or something to that effect. And on Thursday, I'm hoping to get Dr. Yates in here, and our local philosophy professor, and one who's very well-versed in foreign affairs, political affairs, and things of that nature. I've got to get a hold of him. He said he might be able to come on Thursday. And our friends out there at the Political Cesspool, thepoliticalcesspool.org out in Memphis, Tennessee, they webcast 8 to 10 o'clock our time. And these are a couple of populist guys that go out there and bat around the establishment and try to do a lot of the same things we try to do. To let people know what's going on and see if we can bring back the principles that made our country great. There's been too many inroads of communism, socialism, Hegelianism, Marxism, Freudianism, Darwinianism that all have come in and undermined the They've fooled us by trying to copy and maybe use some of the same words that we've used and have taken over the system. Let's see if we can take our country back. All right, well, with that, I'm going to wish you a good day and come back and see us tomorrow or listen to us on the webcast as throughout the day on 97.7 FM. In the Greenville area, or online, go to tyrannyresponse.com and listen in on the web.
Thank you for joining us today on Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Are you sick of all those gospel groups that only sing about God's love and mercy and never about God's judgment? Well, Wrath Records is proud to introduce the Imprecatory Praise Quartet.
Break their teeth in their mouth, oh God. Break their teeth